Hey, podcast listeners. This is Chantel, and welcome to Two Drink Minimum at the Kitchen Table. I am having a glass of white wine. I think it's a Pinot Grigio. Cheers. Yes, there are ice cubes in my white wine because it is summer and I have the windows open and I will be talking to you anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour and I want my drink to stay cold. So you can judge me if you want. It has been a long time since I've sat in front of this microphone. It feels sort of weird and I don't like that. I don't like that it feels weird. But I've had some people over for interviews. They have gone very well. I've gotten some really great conversations out of that. There were also some technical difficulties, which prevented me from recording any new episodes because I didn't know what the technical difficulty was that was occurring to know if I should continue to record any more episodes. But those technical difficulties have been resolved. Thank you to the help desk at Podomatic for helping me. Sloan Wilson was the person who helped me, so thank you very much. Shout out to him. He was exceedingly helpful. I appreciated it very, very much. And I cannot imagine the kind of patience that a help desk person must have, especially when you're not a techie person at all, such as myself, and they're trying to guide you through what the issue may be. But regardless, we got it figured out. Also, some exciting news. I am now on iTunes, so I can be found there. I ask that you please subscribe. Much easier to listen to me off of iTunes than trying to download it from Podomatic. So, yay! Hopefully, I can get on some other platforms here shortly to make it even easier for my listeners who do not have an iPhone. Again, going back to the prior comment about not being techie, when one of the listeners who has an Android phone asked about iTunes and if you could get iTunes on your PC, and I said, yeah, and then that's when I realized that you couldn't get iTunes on an Android because, of course, you wouldn't be able to, but that just never occurred to me. You know, because it's iTunes, so it would be on an iPhone. Duh. Anyway. With taking time off, and I also took a reprieve from the news, this week, for whatever reason, I have done way too much time on my phone, way too much time on headlines. I don't know if I just took so much time off that I'm like, ugh, I must be on my phone knowing everything. And this was just an incredibly stupid week in terms of news because Roseanne Barr said what she said because of Ambien. And that took up all of the news coverage when what should have been the top news story was that the death toll in Puerto Rico as a result of Hurricane Maria went from an official government count of 64 to 4,664 people, right? 4,664. Yeah, it went up 4,600 people. That's disgusting. More than 9/11 and Katrina. That's just, it's disgusting and it's outrageous and people don't care. And the fact that the Roseanne story got all the coverage and no one was covering that in Puerto Rico, I think that should tell you everything that you need to know in terms of mainstream media bias. Then Samantha Bee called Ivanka a cunt and oh my gosh, the world erupted. When what should have been covered was that Trump is putting in place steel and aluminum tariffs, which are going to affect jobs and our economy, and the stock market took a huge dive, which I realize the stock market goes up and down and takes huge swings all the time, but that is a much bigger story than Samantha Bee calling Ivanka a cunt. I don't care that Samantha Bee called Ivanka a cunt. I do not care at all. I think and then that Trump is going to put a kibosh on all German luxury import cars. What sense is there in that? And the cars are made in plants in the South. So you're impacting American jobs, but whatever. Then I thought about talking about all the abortion policies that have gone into place with Ireland and having their vote to overturn the abortion ban, but Northern Ireland, so Ireland overturned their abortion ban, but Northern Ireland, I almost did it fucking again, but Northern Ireland still has an abortion ban in place. So that's interesting to me. Arkansas has reduced medical abortions in their state, so basically taking a pill to have an abortion. There's one clinic now in Little Rock that will be allowed to still perform pill abortions, basically. So all the other clinics, which I think were just two. So I realize in the big scheme of things, okay, so there's three clinics, now we're down to one, so two closed. Right. But why were there only three clinics to begin with? Trump wanting to defund Planned Parenthood. I am here to tell you that as a 44-year-old, I use Planned Parenthood, and I didn't start using Planned Parenthood until I was 35. So who that law is going to impact is me. It's not going to impact teenagers. You're impacting middle-aged women on a fixed income. But moving on. Iowa and our six-week heartbeat bill that passed, and Reynolds signed it, but it wasn't supposed to go into effect until July 1st, but it's now in the court and they've put a halt to it, and it's expected to be overturned. We shall see. We could talk ICE and all the children that are being ripped from their parents' arms and being sent to military bases. I find that rather perplexing that we're, first of all, ripping children from parents and that they're being housed in a military base or undisclosed locations. And I'm going to assume that some have maybe mysteriously disappeared or now maybe being sex trafficked, but I don't want to jump to conclusions or assumptions that are probably true. But I don't want to do that here on this podcast. And I could say how horrible Trump is, but Obama did some of the same things. It's just that we're now more aware of it, and that immigration, I'm just not even going to go into it. I plan on doing a whole episode devoted to ICE and the current immigration policies. MS-13 and why they're suddenly being talked about all over the place in the news. I find that very suspicious also. I plan on doing an episode on that as well. So I have a ton of topics that I want to get into, but having taken so much time off from sitting in front of the microwave, oh, I think I am a little out of practice. I think I'm a little out of practice sitting in front of the microphone. Okay, so cheers. There is a lot of things that I would like to talk about, but having taken a break from sitting in front of the microphone, I have a backlog of topics, but I will get to them. Don't you worry. I will be getting to all of them. But also, if there's a topic that you would like me to cover or you would like to know more about, I'm not opposed to that. Put it in the comments. Say it on Facebook. Say it however you need to say it. If it's something that I find interesting or worth going into, and chances are I will be happy to look into it and do a little bit of information. And who knows, I could maybe get a whole podcast episode off out of it. I also want to do a podcast about Israel and Palestine, but that is going to be a much longer episode. So anyway, what are you going to talk about today? Well, thank you so much for asking. What I am going to talk about today is the documentary that I watched, which was called War Torn, 1861 to 2010. It is the documentary that has James Gandolfini in it. It's one of the last things that he did. And I did not know it was a James Gandolfini documentary when I pushed play, because they changed the cover art on it and I forgot what it was about. But it was about PTSD, but PTSD from 1861 to 2010 in the wars, and how we've changed terms and how it was treated in society and how veterans reacted when they came home. So yes, it was depressing. Certainly not an uplifting episode. Plenty of people talking about members that had committed suicide, family members that had committed suicide, and how that has impacted people, but also plenty of people who have not committed suicide, but have thought about it, and then how that impacted them and their families. So yeah. So during the Civil War, what we now refer to as PTSD, they refer to it as melancholy, insanity, or hysteria. So I love words, and I love how words change. And what we would now call hysteria versus in the 1860s and after. Melancholy, if melancholy now, I would describe as just a little bit depressed, but an insanity. Insanity is probably a good description for PTSD. But after the Civil War, more than half of the mental patients were vets. And I know in the 1860s, and mental hospitals were much different than what mental hospitals are now. For one thing, they might have had funding. But that half of the mental patients were former vets after the Civil War. I don't know. And just some of the things that they talked about where one, he was a ranking person in the military and he worked within the PTSD mental health field. And he's trying to change the stigma of PTSD and mental illness within the military. But he said that, quote, the mystique of the only thing you should feel when killing an insurgent is recoil, end quote. And the fact that we call our enemy an insurgent or just the enemy, where you're trained to kill and you're not trained to not kill once you get out. So you go through boot camp, you're indoctrinated into the military, you're fed all this propaganda, you're shown how evil and disgusting whatever other it is that we're fighting, and you're just trained. But you're not trained how to get out of that mindset. You're just discharged and you're just thrown back into civilian life. And the fact that I just called it civilian life, you're just thrown back into life and you're not deprogrammed. I think right there, we could change some things. But how much of not deprogramming people is part of the purpose of the military? And the fact that we get people when they're 18 and they're just young and they're little balls of clay, and we can teach them to hate another, and we can teach them that it's an insurgent and that they're not a real human being and they don't have families. I think that's all part of the plan, and it's all purposeful. But also that a military can come into a high school and start talking to kids at 14, 15, 16. That's just, no. I have a problem with that, but I understand why it's done. I mean, I'm not an idiot. I understand why they go into high schools. And I understand the whole, you know, you're going to see the world. That's what we were told when I was in high school. It's a chance to see the world. It's a chance to see one small part of the world, and you're going to have a gun in your hand the whole time. But, you know, mere details. And I'm fascinated by the fact that people even join the military still today. Knowing what we know, having the internet, the information that we have, the reason why we're in these countries is oil and resources. It's all for bullshit. It's war for profit, as wars have always been. And that people still join. And part of that is I wonder how many people are joining the military because of the free college and free healthcare, and that you can retire and have a pension. But what is going into that free college, that pension, and that healthcare? And do you want the VA healthcare system? So if we had free and affordable college in this country, and if we had free healthcare in this country, how fewer recruits would the military have? I think that's interesting. I think that's something to look into. Why are young people even joining the military right now, knowing what we know about our military and knowing what we know in terms of why we're in these countries that we're currently in? Bet those two things have something to do with it. I bet those two things have a lot to do with it. Because I'm stupefied by young people joining the military right now. And it makes me really sad. And I would like to say that I'm glad that they're joining the military, but I don't think that's true. I don't think I'm glad that you're joining the military. Because with people, that means we can go and fight these bullshit wars that are nothing except over oil and resources. But if we didn't have live people, which I'm guessing we're getting fewer and fewer live actual people, we're just going to move to a robot drone system. We just are. That's a fact. And one of the things that I've noticed recently is that, so we have, what, 3 telecom companies, truly. I mean, they're smaller ones, but we have 3 major telecom companies. We have 6 corporations in terms of, like, Kraft and Nabisco and General Mills and shit like that. But how many media companies do we have? I think we have 4 or 5 major media companies. And right now, it's going to get even smaller because there's a deal between Disney and Fox that's going on right now. And there's a third company in there that's trying to fight for it all. And I can't remember who that third company is. Anyway, so how much of our media, and by that I mean our sitcoms, our dramas, all of that, is designed to make us think that something is acceptable and okay. And where I'm going with this is that right now we are watching a couple different shows that are about AI and how AI is just acceptable and how it's going to be the next thing. And yeah, it's a sitcom, so there's, you know, some humor and shit in there, but it's really letting us know that this is what's coming up next and that it's okay and it's just a robot and that's fine. Except that our robots are getting better and better and we're teaching our robots how to have, quote, feelings and, quote, be able to think and rationalize. That's scary shit. That's super scary shit. And pretty soon our police force and our military is going to be robots. It just is. I mean, these are things that are currently happening and that are currently in the works. And if you want to poo-poo that, then hello, there's drones. What would you call a drone? It's a robot. And our video games, where they're all just shoot 'em up war games and just talking shit to your fellow, you know, soldiers through your headset. And I realize that I'm not blaming video games. That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying that video games make it easier for people to get into the shoot 'em up, kill 'em mentality. And then if you have drones on top of it, it's just another video game. So if images of war were actually shown, so people's heads being blown off, people's legs being blown off, people's bodies being ripped in two, people's half their bodies being blown up, the babies that are killed, the children that are killed, the women that are killed. If those things were shown, I think we'd have less of a military. Instead, what you see is like a blood splatter or a blood spot, or more to the point, what you see is all the shit that was blown up. So you see the car that was blown up, the building that was blown up, or something that is still smoldering and on fire. You don't actually see the bodies, the dead bodies that are in the street or in the hospital or in the morgue. And so I think if we were seeing actual images of war and what war is and what war does to people when they come home, I think we'd maybe have less war. And you know what? And again, if we had less war, they would just turn to robots. So, yeah, I don't, there's that. So obviously PTSD had stigma. Cheers, hold. There's cheers when it came to PTSD and it wasn't talked about. And again, in the Civil War, it was called melancholy, insanity, or hysteria. And then, let's see, I actually took notes while watching this documentary. But then in World War II, it was called combat fatigue. And they said that if you said that you suffered from combat fatigue, it would get written in your chart that you, quote, have a lack of intestinable fortitude, and it would go in your file, and then no one would want you, and it would be this huge mark on you. And so no one talked about it. And so that's why there were other reasons, not just this, but that's why World War II vets didn't talk about what they saw and what they experienced. And there was plenty of video footage of people, men, because it was men. There's plenty of women that saw shit too, the nurses and whatnot, but this was men. where they're shaking horribly or they're having interviews with doctors and just talking about how upset they are during World War One and Two. And just walking around physically shaking, like physically having tremors and just not being able to talk about anything. So instead, what they did is they drank. And one person said that he thought every bartender in Brooklyn was his psychologist. So, you know, go to the bar, get liquored up for however long, talk to the bartender. Who knows what kind of shit. Well, a bartender hears all kinds of things anyway. Even now. But many of them were abusive fathers. They were abusive husbands. They couldn't keep jobs. This one guy lost 8 jobs in 1 week because they were just completely out of control and they didn't have anywhere to put any of this energy or any of the thoughts and feelings that they were having. And this one guy said that his marriage fell apart. It was completely his fault. He was a horrible father. That was completely his fault. And he has 3 sons and he hasn't talked to any of them in 25 years. And this was in 2010. So I'm going to guess in almost 35 years, if he's still alive. So with that, then how much of everybody that came back from World War II, and there we have the baby boomer generation now in the 60s, yeah, I don't wonder at all why they became hippies and anti-establishment and fought against the Vietnam fucking war. For one thing, we knew more and that the war was bullshit. And as every war since has been bullshit. And then in World War I, it was called shell-shocked. So Civil War, melancholy, insanity, hysteria. World War I, you were shell-shocked. And then in World War II, it was combat fatigue. So actual words describing what you actually experienced and saw. And now we call it PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. So words. I love it. I love words. Patton, General George Patton, there he was visiting Walter Reed, and there was a soldier who was in there for World War II. What did we call it in World War II? Combat fatigue. And he reportedly he was in for nervous exhaustion. We also call it that. And then Patton allegedly said to the soldier, quote, "I won't have the hospitals cluttered up with these sons of bitches who haven't the guts to fight," end quote. And then, quote, "Send that yellow son of a bitch back to the front line," end quote. So I would be curious, one, if that story is true. Two, assuming that story is true, what happened to that soldier? Did he kill himself? Did he go to the front line? Is he shot and dead? Or did he come back a complete son of a bitch? Because of course. But then also, if you did try to get out of combat or did try to leave the military, then you were yellow. And just how we treat things. And war is legal murder. And the military are murderers who recruit people to murder. So I would hope that you would be feeling something other than recoil. I would hope, because otherwise you're a sociopath. And I don't think we should have sociopaths doing legal murder for our government. So I would hope you would feel something, and I would hope that there would be things put in place to help combat that. And I would hope that there would be research to try to figure out how to help those. But also, where we do all of this training to make you a killing machine, we need to deprogram that. And I understand why the government wouldn't want to deprogram people, because we might need you to become a killing machine again in the future. And if we deprogram you, then chances are you're not going to become a killing machine for us in the future. And then, because we've deprogrammed you, what are you going to tell other people? So we can't have that. I mean, clearly, that would be bad. So then in the 1980s, we started calling it PTSD, and we really started to become aware of it during Vietnam. And I think just from my own childhood and looking back and with Agent Orange and that there was a draft and how many people were drafted and they just didn't want to go and they were fighting and doing something that they just didn't want to be part of, I can see why the 70s and 80s were just kind of a dark time. One, the economy was in shambles and factories were being closed and what people were coming back to. But then also we didn't respect the Vietnam vets and they were spit on. But I can understand, like, from some of my teachers who weren't necessarily always there. I had one altercation with my high school history teacher who he had an old radio in his class and I accidentally knocked it down. And I just, one of the things that I used to do, and I'm sure I still do at certain times, is when I start to laugh nervously. And I started to laugh nervously in class after I damaged his radio. I don't think anything happened to it. It just fell. And he stormed out of the room. And everybody was like, ooh, you did it. And so then he comes back into the room. And then everybody's still giving me a hard time about it. And I go, I'm sorry. It was an accident. It's not like I meant to do it. And then he just turned to me. He's like, oh, you're sorry? That's okay. That's okay. And I never knew if that was him just having some sort of weird reaction or if he was trying to teach a high school person a lesson when a lesson didn't really need to be made. I was just nervous and scared that I just damaged something, or if he was just being weird. I mean, who knows? But that's just something that has stuck in my head since I think I was a junior. I don't know. Somewhere in there. Well, I'll say I was 16. Oh, and one of the stories from Vietnam was this guy who his job was to draw everything that he saw, which I thought that was interesting. Like, how the fuck do you get that job? So he was an artist in the field that had to draw everything that he saw. And he said at one point, and he had a drawing of this. So what he said versus what the image was, I don't know if what he saw was this image. I don't know. But it was a body that had been blown in half and the torso was hanging from the tree. And the guy was still alive and he was blinking really fast. And he's like, that image does not leave me. And the painting that he had made was the guy had really bright blue eyes. And I just think, yeah, I bet that would do some damage to you if you saw a guy get blown in half. He's hanging in a tree and he's blinking. I understand that the nervous system does certain things before you actually die or if you experience a trauma. I would say that if you're blinking, and he said he was blinking just really fast, that they might still be alive. And they might know that they've been blown in half and are hanging in a tree. So, and I think another thing that maybe needs to happen is instead of having a military parade, like Trump wants to have all our dicks on parade this fall, a military parade to show all of our military might. I think instead what we should have is a parade, which I don't really want to call it a parade, and I hate parades, but for lack of a better word, I think we should have a parade of all wounded vets. So if you're a double amputee, if you're a quadruple amputee, if you've been lit on fire and burned, if you've had half your face blown off, and then if you suffer from PTSD and mental illness, then we can do some sort of image for that. I think those images need to be shown along with the bodies being blown up in the street and the bodies hanging from the tree that are blown in half. And I think if we had those kind of images, once again, I bet we wouldn't have so many people enlisting. So again, I understand why those images aren't being shown. I'm just saying, I think it would be a good idea if they were. Cheers. And then maybe we can show the families that were torn up too. The families that were torn apart because of a war. And also during the Iraq and Afghanistan war, where we weren't allowed to go into the field and we weren't allowed to show the caskets and we weren't allowed to show the bodies. That seems like government propaganda and censorship. Bullshit. Fucking bullshit. And how many people died in 9/11? How many people died in 9/11? But how many people have died in the Afghan war? It's ridiculous. One mom said, and her son had PTSD, and within a month of him returning, he beat up a Middle East cab driver. And what they think happened is that he thought he was having another nightmare, like a literal nightmare, and that he didn't realize until he was on the ground in handcuffs that he wasn't dreaming. And so in his dream, he was reacting that he needs to take this person out. He's an insurgent. Only this is real life. So he's served 6 years in prison for that. So I'm sure between the PTSD of war and then going to prison, I'm sure he's a model citizen right now. I'm sure. No repercussions whatsoever from that. And what she said, the mom of the son that I just told you about, what she said is that the military takes kids at 18 and puts them through a paper shredder. And then it's the family shops to put the pieces all back together again. Only you can't find all the pieces. And there's pieces missing. And I thought that described it beautifully. That we just take these kids and we shred them up. And we have them fight our bullshit, fake, corporate, for-profit wars. And then we just discharge them. No deprogram. We just discharge them and send them back out into society. Only they don't know how to cope. And then 39% of vets in prison have PTSD. I bet it's higher than that. I bet it's more than 39%. And I bet if you have PTSD when you go into prison, I bet you're going to have more PTSD when you get out of prison. I think it's time for some fun facts. Let's look up our fun facts. Okay, so how many people do you think have died in the nation's wars? I don't know, Chantel. How many? Roughly 1,264,000 American soldiers have died in the nation's wars, 620,000 in the Civil War, and 644,000 in all other conflicts. It was only as recently as the Vietnam War that the amount of American deaths in foreign wars eclipsed the number who died in the Civil War. 1,264,000 in the nation's wars, 620,000 in the Civil War, and 644,000 in all other conflicts. I'm going to guess some of that's because of medicine and technology, that we lost so many in the Civil War and not as many in the others. Also, in World War One, they discovered that most of the ammunition was being shot over people's heads. So we needed to do better training there. So not to waste ammunition, but also we have to kill these people. Let's hurry this up. Let's speed this war up. We need to kill people. Which war killed the most people? By far the most costly war in terms of human life was World War II, 1939 to 1945, in which the total number of fatalities, including battle deaths and civilians of all countries, is estimated to have been 56.4 million, assuming 26.6 million Soviet assuming 26.6 million Soviet fatalities and 7.8 million Chinese civilians were killed. Why are we assuming? And these numbers are from the Guinness Book of World Records. I just realized what my source was. Well, you type it into Google, this is what you're going to get. I think this is probably accurate. I think these are accurate. They might be off by a few, you know, thousand, but I think we get the point. So I'm going to read this again. World War II. 56.4 million, if we are assuming 26.6 Soviet and 7.8 million Chinese. It's insane. Fucking insane. Great population control. I mean, war is amazing population control. So then I was curious as to all time. So let's just not do Civil War to now. Let's look at all time wars. So, well, am I just going to have to eat crow? Well, Wikipedia is telling me that World War II was 15 million. Oh, no. Never mind. That's fine. Okay. So, the Mongolian conquest, which the Mongolian conquest, in terms of population control, the Mongols were amazing. And if you were to do a DNA ancestry, like Ancestry.com or genealogy DNA test, which I do not recommend that you do because I looked into it because I was curious. And it turns out that they can keep your DNA forever and they can sell it to whoever they want. And I just think that sounds a little risky. So I'm not going to have my DNA sold to, you know, whoever. So I chose not to do it. However, should you choose to do it, chances are you're going to have Mongol come back in your DNA and you're going to be like, what's that about? Well, they raped and pillaged so well, the Mongols did, that they were killing populations at the same time as raising populations by all the raping and pillaging. Interesting fun fact. I recommend listening to Dan Carlin's Genghis Khan episode. It's over 3 hours, but incredibly interesting. I recommend listening to Dan Carlin any kind time you can, because it's fascinating, but they're incredibly long episodes. Anyway, so the Mongol conquests, which were from 1206 to 1368, so Genghis, the main Genghis, started it, but, you know, probably didn't finish it, obviously, because that's a really long time. Anyway, 30 million to 40 million people killed. That's fucking insane. The Three Kingdoms War. What would the Three Kingdoms be? It's not going to let me click on it. From 184 to 280, the Three Kingdoms. What would be the Three Kingdoms in 184? I'm going to go with... Who would that be? Middle East. Probably Greek, Roman, somebody. German, Vikings. Who would that be? Who would have that been? China? I don't know. Anyway, 36 million to 40 million. It's fucking ridiculous. So anyway, then what were America's deadliest wars? America's 10 deadliest wars. Afghanistan, 2001 to present. We're never going to get out. It's always going to be present. It's always going to be 2001 to present. Always. Always. You know why? Because we want Iran, which is a whole nother topic. The Iran nuclear deal and the reason we pulled out of it is because Iran has always been our target. Always. So do I think we're going to have boots on the ground in Iran? No, that would be incredibly fucking stupid. Do I think we're going to do bombs and drones? Yep. Yep, I do. Saudi Arabia wants Iran. We want Iran. It's going to fucking happen, people. It's going to fucking happen. Just you wait. The reason we went into Afghanistan and Iraq when no one from Afghanistan or Iraq was involved in 9/11, the people from 9/11 that were involved was primarily Saudi Arabia. But the reason we didn't invade Saudi Arabia is because they're our allies in the petrodollar. Only now we're getting off the petrodollar. What? And Iran is changing from the U.S. currency to the euro. So what kind of impact is that going to have on our economy? And the whole point, the whole reason we're pulling out of it is because we fucking want Iran. It's our goddamn target. It's our fucking target. And we've been chomping at the bit. So the Afghanistan war going from 2001 to present, it's always going to be 2001 to present. It doesn't matter what year we're in. It's always going to be. We're always going to fucking be there. We just don't fucking talk about it. We don't talk about Afghanistan. We don't talk about Iraq. We're still fucking there. Haven't fucking left. Yemen, Sudan, Syria, all, we're still fucking there. We don't give a fuck. We don't give a fuck about those people. We don't give a fuck about those countries. And I think I've just demonstrated that we don't give a fuck about our soldiers. And don't even get me started about the VA and the care that you get when once you come back. So if you want to know how we feel about our soldiers and that we don't give a fuck, look at the VA and look at the state of veterans' health and veterans' health care. Again, go through the first half of me jibber-jabbering on you here about it. Don't care. Okay, so Afghanistan, 2001 to present, the total deaths were 2,322. And this is according to iCasualties.org. I'm going to say I think it's probably more than that. But we will stick with 2,322. I really think it's more than that. And obviously, I don't know what date that is from. The Spanish-American War, total deaths, and that was from 1898 to 1901. It did not need to happen. That was propaganda, bullshit, lies from Teddy Roosevelt, who said, did he say that... They fired on us and sank a ship? I think so. Anyway, it was a complete lie. And there was 2,442 deaths, but I think a lot of them were because of malaria, not necessarily a bullet. Either way, people died. Still bad. The Revolutionary War, 1775 to 1783. Total deaths, 4,435. Okay, you know what? This isn't giving me all the numbers. I don't like this. So, death in Iraq war. And I know I've tried looking this up before and I couldn't get a number. Okay, so here. Yeah, so we're not going to believe that last number. As of June 29th, 2016, according to the U.S. Department of Defense, so I'm not going to believe this number either, but just to get a guesstimate, there were 4,424 total deaths, including both killed in action and non-hostile, and 31,952 wounded in action as a result of Operation Iraqi Freedom. You know, let's think about that name. Operation Iraqi Freedom. Again, words. Bullshit words. How free do you think Iraq feels? How free do you think the Iraqi people feel? Give me a break. Oh, how many Iraqi civilians have died? Okay, well, again, take this number for what it's worth. I don't think this is necessarily an accurate number, but approximately 500,000. 500,000 civilians have died since the Iraq invasion in 2003. So we went into Afghanistan in 2001, Iraq in 2003. And that number is from 2013. So far, far more. You know, since 2013, I'm going to guess we probably killed a quarter of a million more people. So I'm going to call that 750,000. How many innocent civilians have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan? From 2015, it says 210,000. I'm going to go with more. So here's a lesson. You can't get an accurate number because I've gone to three different sites at least, and they've all given me different information. So Washington Post, Huffington Post, Wikipedia, the Department of Defense, all given different numbers. Here's a number way too fucking many. The number of people killed in our fake bullshit for-profit wars, the answer is way too fucking many. Way too fucking many. The amount of civilians killed in U.S. bullshit for-profit propaganda wars. Too many. Too many. The reason we have insurgents and the reason people hate us for-profit bullshit wars where over 500,000 innocent civilians die. What would happen in this country if somebody came and invaded us and we had boots on the ground in this country from someone else in another country and 500,000 of us died? I bet we would rise up. I bet we would now be called insurgents and we would be the enemy. And next thing you know, we'd have a robot with a gun running down the road at us. And there'd be drones overhead. And just like in the Middle East, where they don't like sunny, cloudless days because they can hear the drones, they like their cloudy days because there's no drones, because the drones can't see anything. If I was to go outside and hear a buzzing sound and have it be a drone, do you know what kind of fucking PTSD I would have? Do you know what kind of person I would become? Bullshit and nonsense. Nonsense and bullshit. Bullshit and nonsense. So, if we had free and affordable college, free healthcare. Oh, here's another thing. Here's another fun fact I need to look up. How many immigrants join the U.S. military? A lot of immigrants join the military with the thought that because they've joined, they're going to be a U.S. citizen. Not true. Not true. And a lot of the, quote, Mexicans being sent back to their country after being here for 20, 30 years are former military that were not citizens sent back. Okay. One moment as I click on some links. Okay, so this is U.S. immigration. The program will be open to those who receive deferral action, so DACA. Reports show that there are around 2.1 million young undocumented immigrants in the U.S. This included children, youth, and teenagers. Under the new Pentagon policy, 1,500 immigrants will be recruited every year. This program would create new paths to U.S. citizenship for the undocumented immigrants. Yep, but some of them doesn't happen for. The U.S. military recruits around 5,000 green card holders every year. The military is also accepting foreigners with temporary student and tourist visas. So, if we get rid of DACA and Dreamers, and we're closing the border to immigrants, who the fuck's going to be in our military? Because those joining the military currently are immigrants and undocumented citizens. Because, again, we know that what the fuck is going on in this country, and we know that it's bullshit for war propaganda, war for profit, war for resources and oil. I'm not going to fucking join. So, yeah. Okay, I want to go to a couple more sources on the immigrants. And, okay, this is from NPR. I hate NPR, but the other ones are all org websites, and I want a news website. Army tightens rules for immigrants joining as a path to citizenship. This is from October 22nd, 2017, NPR. The Pentagon is making it harder for immigrants to join the armed forces as a path to citizenship. The policy change was announced earlier this month. It affects all foreign nationals, including green card holders. Mattis says he believes the military needs to protect itself from potential espionage within its ranks. Is there a lot of that going on? Is there a lot of espionage going on within the military? Within the branches? Just come on. As a U.S. Army officer, Margaret Stock created a program to recruit specialized immigrants to the military, a program known as MAVNI, M-A-V-N-I. Since then, that program has been suspended. Colonel Stock is now retired from the Army and is an immigration attorney. She joined... Okay, so they did a radio interview. So she said, Margaret Stock said, before Friday, October 13th, 2017... immigrants who join the military could take advantage of an expedited path to U.S. citizenship. On Friday, October 13th, the current administration, Trump, reversed the expedited path to citizenship. They basically said it's not available anymore, and they are only allowing immigrants serving in the military to obtain their citizenship if they negotiate a lot of bureaucratic obstacles. The DOD also said they have to complete an extensive set of background checks. So I bet they joined the military in the hopes of expediting becoming a U.S. citizen, but nope. Already tons of red tape to become a U.S. citizen in this country. We have one of the hardest immigration policies of all countries, of almost any country, I should say. And already a very strenuous vetting process, and now we're making it harder. Stock, I was appalled by this because it's obvious the military is going to lose a valuable source of recruits. The foreign-born right now are 13.5% of the population, and the percentage of the population that's foreign-born is growing. So if you're going to say that the military can't recruit 13.5% of the population, you're restricting military recruiting only to citizens. You're going to end up with much less quality in terms of language, foreign language skills, and cultural skills. The reporter. But the rationale behind these moves, though, is to proper vetting, just to do more extensive background checks. So it's not saying they can't come in, period. It's saying, let's slow this down, right? Stock. Well, that's the ostensible excuse for doing it, and nobody's against background checks. Everybody thinks background checks are great, but when you do the type of background checks that they're doing, you end up with nobody in the military. Then she laughed. Essentially, when Customs and Border Patrol did similar background checks, they flunked 2/3 of their applicants. The proper way to handle espionage threats is to investigate them and prosecute people. But what you don't do is label an entire group of people as security threats just because they were born in a foreign country. The article goes on from there. So, 13.5% of our population is immigrants. And we're going to keep that population who wants to join the military from joining the military. Good luck to us. I wish us the best of luck. Well, with that, I have one last drink. So I am going to say, you know, bullshit war propaganda, for profit wars over oil and resources. If we're not in your country, be thankful. You don't have anything we want. Because if we wanted something, we'd find a reason to come in. So, don't draw any attention to yourself. Don't let us know that you have anything valuable there, because we will invade you. Just a matter of if it's going to be a person with a gun or a robot, but eventually we're going to invade you. It's a good thing we're not attached to any country that we want. Good thing we're attached to Mexico and Canada, although we seem to be pissing them off pretty well right now. Mexico, I don't know so much about Canada, but I think we did something last week to piss them off too. I think it had to do with tariffs. Anyway, so with that, I'm going to say one last cheers. Oh, didn't get it all. One last cheers. It was good sitting back in front of the mic. I missed it. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening. And I will say, once again, thank you for listening. Remember to share the love, not the hate. Thank you. Love you. Bye.